Okay.
Well, I'm just gonna well,
I'll edit in Audacity. Don't worry.
No. You can't edit it now. No way. That has to be in it.
Hello. This is Dr. Joe Camerato. I'm here on the Golden Nuggets podcast. We have Claire Zai and my special guest, Dr. CJ DePalma. We're very excited to be talking about women's health and considerations in fitness and sport, and just kind of in general, because it's a topic that I'm unsure of a lot about. And so we thought that we'd bring an expert in. Claire's a coach for Barbell Medicine and is currently trying to get into medical school, which is awesome. Claire's passionate about women's fitness and debunking misinformation about women's training. And Claire also competes in powerlifting at the national level. Claire, thank you very much for coming to chat and educate the people.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
Yeah. So CJ, I know that we were just talking about all this stuff, and I will be editing the beginning.
I refuse it. I pay for the podcast. You can't edit.
one of CJ's sayings is that variability is the key to longevity. And Claire, I just kind of wanted to highlight the variability of your sporting background, from slacklining to snowboarding to swimming and all that stuff.
Oh, wow. So you went way back in my Instagram.
I went in it.
Stalker.
And so I just wanted to kind of give us a rundown of all of the different movement, complex movements you've done to kind of bring you to a national level powerlifting champion. Yeah,
for sure. So I started off basically when I could walk. I was playing soccer. Didn't know which direction to run, but I was still going somewhere. When you're four, it counts. It doesn't matter.
Right.
And then I played soccer until I was 18. And around the time I was in high school, I ended up picking up diving as well. So I was part of the swim and dive team, mostly did diving. Cardio is not really my jam. Neither is long extended periods underwater. So ended up doing diving, quit both of those when I got to college, and ended up becoming a gym rat. Like, I needed to stay active and moving, and the gym was easy and accessible. So I became a gym rat and stuck with that for a while. And then when I was in my master's, I was working on getting better at lifting, and a friend was like, hey, you're actually, like, your numbers are pretty competitive. We should take you to a meet. So I first competed in a USPA meet, and that's kind of it. Other than that, like, I rock climb and snowboard, and I used to slackline. I still have it, but I don't use it. There's just nowhere to put it anymore when you're not on a campus. There's no trees.
Right.
I don't have big enough trees in San Diego. So
and I think you're underselling yourself with the powerlifting thing. Can you just kind of touch on the podium spots that you've gotten on a national level?
Yeah. So I ended up winning my weight class at the Arnold this past year in 2020. It was in 2020, yeah. And ranked third in that meet. And then I placed fifth at nationals in 2019. My powerlifting career started, I won first in my weight class and a couple state records. And that hooked me. I can't lie, but like,
success is a really good,
it's a good motivator.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
It's definitely a good selection process when you first start out. Oh, let me just win a lot of stuff. Yeah.
And then I found Barbell Medicine, and they pushed me even better. So
yeah, you moved from their group programming to individual programming to being one of the coaches, which is again quite a
progress. I just bothered them enough. Just poked Jordan enough times, and I was like, hey, pay attention.
And then
to
you
me.
Became Jordan for Halloween, right? CJ, she made a post where she dressed up with a 5 o'clock shadow and a Barbell Medicine hat, and nice. It was very funny.
That's awesome.
That was my most shared post for a very long time.
That's good. Yeah, consistency, like on the verge of annoyance, is like key to get what you want, by the way.
Yeah,
like for sure. People. It is. It is. I was like in the strength world, like intern to masters to like get internships and GAs, and like, that's it, man. You, like, stay in those DMs. Well, I guess back then it was emails. There was no DMs, but like, you just stay consistent with it. And it's like, oh, they're persistent. And like, man, this guy's really persistent. And that's where you stop, because then it's like, oh, he's annoying, right? Or she's annoying. So you're gonna stay there. So it's, I want to know a little bit about your like educational background. So where'd you go to school? What'd you get your master's in? And how did med school come about?
Yeah. So I went to the University of Colorado at Boulder for my undergrad and my master's. I did like a Go Buffaloes, or as we like to say, SCO Buffs. I did a like combined undergrad master's program. So in 5 years, I came out with my master's. And then, I studied there is I studied biomechanics technically. So my degree is technically in physiology, but my thesis project was physiology and biomechanics combined. And the lab that I worked in was a biomechanics lab. And they studied adaptive athletes, athletes with prosthetics mostly. So we were working with like high level Paralympic athletes. Right now they're working with like some sprinters and some long jumpers. And I don't know if that information is public, like who they're working with. So I won't tell you, but they work with like really high profile stuff. Getting people who are in the Paralympics into the Olympics. That's kind of what they work on. And then I ended up out here in San Diego working for a clinical biomechanics lab for the Navy. So that's my current job on top of coaching. So I do that and I help like get people active after these lower limb traumatic injuries. And so I'm part of a team that helps with that. And, ever since I started that, I was like, I want to have more contact with people. I want to I like working with people. I like the one-on-one contact that I got during my master's while I was doing my thesis project. And I was like, clinical work should cover that. Like clinical research, it doesn't. I spend a lot of time doing paperwork, a lot of time reading papers, which I enjoy, but it's not the like one-on-one stuff that I get as a coach. And so combining those two passions of science and coaching kind of led me to medicine. And I have been trying to get into medical school now. This is my second round. So didn't get in last year. The pandemic royally screwed me over.
Sure.
But I just have to be better prepared. So I'm currently studying to retake the MCAT and be a better candidate. So
I'll put in a good word with the people.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
No problem.
Yeah.
I annoy them too. I just poke them continually until they talk to me.
Line. Yep.
If there are any 2 degrees now, having been 6 years out of school now, like neuroscience and physiology and psychology, I think would be right up along there for what we know now, you know? That'll be a very good background to go into med school with. And we wish you good luck.
Thank you. Hope Thank that works you. Out. All right. So that's it. That's the whole podcast.
That's it.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Bye.
I think that we have a few really big topics that we can spend a lot of time on. CJ and I work as coaches for Wad Prep Masters, or Wad Prep really, but our main focus is Wad Prep Masters. And so we have a lot of 35 and older females that we come in contact with on a regular basis, and we polled them, and you know, they asked a bunch of questions, and we have kind of put some of them in here, but we also have topics that just in general are confusing to the layperson, even to people who are not the layperson. And I actually think that we're going to get into some of the problems with some of the research that comes out, because it's not always that cut and dry. It's kind of like nutrition research, where it's like, you can't just lock people up for a long duration. And so we kind of have to assume some things. So do you want to start on like differences in men and women training responses?
Yeah. So there's research that shows that the difference between men and women is smaller than the difference between people. So if you take all of the people on who are training and you measure their response to a certain training program, some people are going to be really high responders and some people aren't going to respond at all, or some people might actually get worse. And you can't actually separate that out by sex. So it's not like all of the men are high responders and all of the women are like kind of or no responders. It's like very heavily mixed and actually more dependent on like genetics or size or training history and other things like that. There's this article by, I don't know how to say his name properly, Atianen, I think it's pronounced.
I think you got it.
But he has a really, yeah, we'll put it in the notes. He has a really interesting picture that shows like all of the people. They had like 500 people in their study who all completed the same training program, and some people got really, really good with it and some people didn't. And so it's more based on, and they couldn't separate it out by sex. So
very interesting. I know that in the past I've kind of listened to stuff where like lower extremity strength is similar between the sexes, but then like upper extremity strength is it, or like throwing strength is different. Mm-hmm. Adolescence, yeah. Or is there any information there? I don't.
Yeah. So women based on the research, women have a better response to upper body resistance training than men do. And I think, so there's some hypotheses that this is actually due to the fact that women are less active than men after puberty. So like women's involvement in sports and physical activity declines after puberty. And so because men are encouraged to be more rough and tumble, more rowdy, engage in sports, and their physical activity is play, or their play is physical activity, they are probably just at a higher level starting the bench press than women are. So women tend to increase their bench press strength more quickly when they start out as to a similarly sized and trained male, because men might actually be more well-trained when they start.
So I'm reading the Sport Gene, and that's like the whole thing that we just like, that was like the whole chapter we just read. It was like, all of that is like, it's, you know, like throwing strength is like the only one that's like just purely shown, like untrained to untrained is like the only one that has a really big difference, but the mm-hmm. range is still roughly the same of like, there's, mm-hmm. you know, like basically like, you know, 2 men out of 100 will like not be outthrown, or like will be outthrown by like all 100 women. And that was pretty interesting that like, it really does like boil down to more genetics, like in like how people are responding in familial relationships mm-hmm. compared to like men to women and things like that. But they were talking about it, like just the fact of kind of like where we are in society, and like, we're still new to like women training and those kind of things, as far as like being written into your genome, and as far as like, mm-hmm. you know, however many years back. And so it's I think that's super accurate to say like the range is so much bigger because the starting point's usually substantially lower post puberty and mm-hmm. when they start training.
Yeah. And many women probably have the genes written into their genome. They like have the specific genotype and phenotype to play mm-hmm. sports and be really high level, but aren't encouraged to do so.
Right.
Which I think is a big push that I try and make, is like, honestly, if you train however you want, whatever, but I just want you training
right.
in some way.
And ironically, what is today?
It's National Girls and Women's in Sports Day. Sorry, I get very excited. I've been planning this post. I made a post about it today, and I've been planning that post for like a month and a half.
Wow, it's a long time for a post. I love it.
It's not anything special, but I knew exactly what day it was, and I was like, it's gonna be ready at 6 a.m.
Does anything happen today, or is it just like recognition of that there's some awesome, powerful women in sports, or what is it, just a day?
Yeah, it's partially just a day. It was actually started to celebrate a Black woman. I think she was a volleyball player who died of Marfan syndrome very suddenly. And I'd have to look up her name. I don't remember it off the top of my head. But she, the reason the day exists is for her. And then now it's been morphed into a celebration of all women and trying to get more women involved in sports. And I like to celebrate it by bringing up other people around me and talking about the fantastic things that other women do in sports, and highlighting the fact that when women get to play sports, we make each other better. And
most definitely.
Yeah. I think it was, I don't remember who it was, but brought up, instead of having competition, you have cooperation. It's like cooperative competition where everyone makes each other better.
Sure.
So,
well, cool. I'm glad that that's a day, because I had no, I mean, I full transparency, I had no idea that that was a thing, and I'm glad that it is.
Uncultured swine.
Oh, I know, right? but it's cool because, kind of going back onto what you're saying about women not really wanting to train in a way that would express that kind of ability to put on upper body strength or mass. I think we could even get into like social constructs if you wanted to, about how like it's probably all skewed, right?
Yeah. Yeah. How deep do you want to go? Yeah.
Give us the cliff notes on it.
Yeah. So women are just typically pushed to not be involved in sports. There's some biases, like most women do not want to fulfill a stereotype of being like aggressive, or there's that stereotype threat of like not fulfilling the stereotype you've been given. There's just a difference in how we talk about women, how we tell women sports are important or not important for them. So most sports for women are marketed as lose weight or get smaller or look toned, which are all fine goals. But if we want to get more women into sports, it's probably not the only message we should be giving. And then when women are involved in sports, we kind of tell them that it's not important. Or the way the media portrays women's sports is always very sexual, often very sexualized, and often underrepresented compared to their male counterparts. And very often it's not being portrayed in action. They're like right. Posed shots or something like that. So
it's kind of cool with strength sport, like in the last 5 years or so, whether it be powerlifting, making a kind of a big comeback, or not comeback, but just like starting to grow more, and then CrossFit as a way for women to get into professional strength sport as well. It's such a cool time for those like at the top level to really show that, you know, you can really be in peak physical condition as a female and mm-hmm. perform at a very high level without like these side effects or things that
we get to talk down about. We get to set what femininity looks like for ourselves.
Sure.
And that's really cool. So and I think CrossFit has done this incredible thing for women's sports, is they've made it much more accessible for women to be able to see other women doing really hard stuff. And it's really cool that women in CrossFit are able to make that push, and athletes have this responsibility to change the world around us. Like, we have that visibility, and it's our responsibility to take ownership of that and make the world better for the people who want to follow in our footsteps. So
very cool. CJ,
obviously I'm super biased to like CrossFit giving that, I don't know, that avenue to women, or like creating that. And, yeah. And I think it's so great. And
yeah.
From a financial aspect and a media aspect, like it's the only thing, you know, mm-hmm. at least from like a large scale perspective, that's been even keel the whole time. I mean, you know, like you, besides your man, I mean, like, you, if you look at like the top three female CrossFitters, like from Instagram, I know that's a terrible way, but it's like, it's a good driver of like who's popular, and like that's going to drive financial mm-hmm. and sponsorships and money and, you know, coverage, et cetera. I mean, your top five female athletes have way more followers than your top five male athletes, and, mm-hmm. and like just a bigger reach. And that's amazing. That's so cool.
Yeah.
And it's, I hope that starts to trickle into other sports continuously, at least the barbell sports. And we can see mm-hmm. that happening with, you know, people like you or Steffi and those things, like, are really like, it's becoming more of a thing, which is awesome.
I think it is. And I think it's really cool to see that. I would love to see what each, and I'll never get this information, but the monetary compensation from each of those like deals that they make, all of like men and women, their sponsorship deals. Do men typically make more on those sponsorship deals than women? Because that would be like where we don't see the inequality. Sure. And that would be something we'd have to start evaluating as well.
Dig into. Sure.
CJ, who are the top female athletes in CrossFit?
Well, like Instagram?
I don't know.
Or perform. Well, those are two different things. I don't know.
Tia's the top.
Tia's for sure. Matt just retired, so that's RIP. Gone. But Tia.
Yeah, I saw that.
Tia, Haley Adams. You have to put Haley in there. Probably Brooke Wells, Katrin, and probably Kara Saunders. Those are probably the five. I'd say like your five best. Cool. Which will for sure change. Like, it's cool because there's like, you know, Matt was where he was and there was just such a gap, but all the girls besides Tia is like, you're like 2 through 9 or like right there. It could be anyone based on a workout or the day, which is cool.
Keeping it in, I guess we could keep it in strength sport, although I know that this happens across all sports. I kind of wanted to get on to incontinence because I know that before I've listened to like Greg Knuckles and Eric Trexler talk to the Girls Gone Strong team about mm-hmm. incontinence and how insanely prevalent it really is. So what sort of information on incontinence and females in sport do you have for us?
Yeah, so incontinence or like urinating during training is really prevalent, especially in powerlifting, especially in the deadlift and the squat. Those are the two big perpetrators. But it's very common, but it doesn't mean it's normal. So it happens to a lot of women. It doesn't mean it's normal. And I think that's like a misconception that gets portrayed a lot of like, oh, it's normal. It happens to everyone. It's like, it's not normal. It indicates that there's something going wrong. But it's also maybe not a coach's job to fully fix it. Like we have tools at our disposal to help get this back to where it needs to be. There are some exercises you can do, but what really needs to happen is you probably need to be evaluated by a pelvic floor therapist to look for anything that would be like more of an issue than just like pelvic floor weakness or dysfunction. This is something that we're like, we got to make sure that nothing else is going on at the same time. So, because the whole urogenital tract is complicated.
Very confusing.
Well, it's a whole nother profession within a profession.
Yeah.
It's a whole nother profession within another degree.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, if you ask CJ and I, like what our education on pelvic floor was, we'd probably just say, do some Kegels and, you know, don't press as hard and, you know, let us know how that goes, which.
Yeah.
I don't think is a very good recommendation.
Yeah. And then also don't press as hard when you're trying to win your weight class at nationals. Like for people who haven't been to nationals, the women's platform is wet every time at deadlifts. And it's something you deal with. Most women sumo powerlift, so we can step around it, but it's like, you can't tell someone who's like trying to go for the top. Right. To just not do it.
Sure.
Like hold it. Just don't pee. Yeah. Just hold it in.
Stop that.
That's the most helpful information you've ever given me. Thank you.
Now, as far as strength support, the information that I've gotten or at least heard about incontinence during this is kind of along the lines of find a weight that you can train at or find an intensity or some sort of metric that you can train at that it doesn't happen, train there and then try and work your way back up. I know that you said that it's not really a coach's job to intervene on this. Is there any like sort of way that we can try to be better in that sense without keeping people from referring out to a professional?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that how I work it with the athletes that I work with is I will give you these tools of, we're going to start working at this lower weight, try and not bear down. And see if we can build from there. If we're running into consistent problems and it's not getting better with these small things that I have, I am not comfortable not referring out because I don't have medical degree of any kind yet. And so I'm more than willing to say, like, as someone who only has a master's, this is somebody else's responsibility because it's your body and it's important that we make sure that everything is working correctly. And like that you're safe and we're not, I don't think that it causes damage, but like, we don't want to make it a perpetual issue that you have to then work 10 times harder to fix.
Sure. I have a question about something you said. Why is it that most women pull sumo? I feel like now that I'm like racking my brain of female powerlifters, I can see that that is absolutely true, but
everyone pulls sumo.
I don't pull sumo.
Well, come on, get with it.
Yeah, get with it. What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? Ever done it? It's way easier.
Wrong. So I think a lot of women pull sumo because it is like an advantage that we can take because of how our hips are built. We might sit a little bit wider, depending on the woman. Like, and that is something that a lot of us can take advantage of and get closer to the bar. We give up having that like strong power off the floor. Like sumo off the floor is typically pretty slow, and then the lockout's pretty fast, whereas conventional is typically the other way. But you, it's all about trade-offs and like what you can maximize. And I think not only is it that a lot of women pull sumo, so that indicates to other women that pulling sumo might be for them, that modeling is important, but that's just, I think that's the pattern that I've seen. So
oh, very interesting. I guess I'd never thought of hip anthropomorphics of as a tool, I guess, you know. Yeah, if you ask some camps, you know, sumo isn't even allowed, you know.
Yeah,
it's only conventional.
Yeah. Strongman, I think, has good reason to not allow sumo deadlifting, but depends on the powerlifting competition.
Yeah, sport specific, yeah. Does like, are there any federations that don't allow it? I don't know. I mean, I feel like I know a good bit about powerlifting, but are there any federations that are like, no, you can't?
I've only ever competed in two federations, so I don't know.
USAPL for life.
Yeah. Not that diehard about it.
Yeah, but. Right.
Just nationally ranked. That's fun.
You got all your SPD stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. Head for to sure. toe. Yeah. Just not the belt yet. Their belt is just too expensive.
Yeah. I don't even know what my lever belt is. I think I mean, I got it as a gift years ago. I'm sure it's, I'm just waiting for it to explode one of these days, like Lane Norton's used to on a regular basis. All right. So I wanted to hit on Menzies, because again, another thing that I have next to no idea. Do you just want to give us like, what is Menzies for the, give us a rundown, because this is what I'm excited about.
Menzies, or the menstrual cycle, or your period, whatever you want to call it, are all basically talking about the same thing. And it's that time during the month when a woman starts bleeding at the beginning of her follicular phase. So there's two phases of the menstrual cycle, the follicular phase and the luteal phase. So the follicular phase is from when you start bleeding all the way up until the point that you ovulate. For most women, it's about 2 weeks. And then the other half is the luteal phase. So from the point at which you ovulate until you start bleeding. And typically that's also about 2 weeks. So the whole cycle is about 28 days. That's very, it's very variable. It's not consistent across women. It's not consistent within one woman from cycle to cycle. It's messy, if you will. And so we have a lot of data about, like, and there's hormonal fluctuations that are going on at the same time. So during the follicular phase, so from when you start bleeding up until you ovulate, there's like a steady increase in estrogen, and then it tanks right before ovulation. And then during the second half, there's progesterone and estrogen that both increase in like this bell-shaped curve and then come back down. And so there's a thought that this estrogen changes how we are able to produce strength or show our strength. And it's more complicated than that. So the prevailing notion is that during the end of that follicular phase, when estrogen is highest, women are strongest. And then during the, like right before they start their period, that later half of their luteal phase, they're weakest. And this doesn't really seem to play out in the literature when we start to look at like broader questions or like broader ranges of people, like more people, broader subjects. And there's like a couple of reasons for it. So there's been a ton of animal studies about estrogen where they usually use ovarectomies. So they're taking out the ovaries of a small rat and then testing like strength outcomes. There's an unloading study on a set of ovarectomized rats. And it seems like these rats don't do as well. They get less strong. They lose muscle mass. And
just
then
picturing a rat doing a bench press.
Yeah. They, how do they, in the brain? Yeah, they test them. They like attach their foot to a lever and they like, I think they shock the rat and see how much force it can output.
Russian tens leg press. Got it.
Wouldn't that, never mind. No, that's not,
sorry, keep going.
But they shock a different part of the rat. They don't shock the leg. So the rat's trying to get away. But so they're measuring muscle strength. And then when they replace estrogen exogenously, these seem to return. These strength and muscle size outcomes seem to return. So in women, we can't just like take out their ovaries for science and see what happens.
Right.
So we have to like study across the age span or the lifespan. And so as women hit menopause, the thought is that like, okay, now you have less estrogen, we should see a decrease in strength. And we do see a decrease in strength at the beginning of menopause, but we also see most women decrease their activity levels, most women decrease training levels. And so that might not actually be the reason for it. And so there's more data on this kind of stuff. And lots of women get stronger during, like after they've passed through menopause. So it's not like you hit menopause and you're done. There's a lot of studies that show that like women can get stronger in older age. And there are many examples within powerlifting even of women who get stronger even after they've already passed through menopause. So,
and it seems like kind of a good idea considering that there are some sort of morbidity and mortality changes that happen after menopause, right? From my recollection is that there's some bone density changes as well as cardiac increased risks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so if you can continue to train and target those things and prevent like the loss of bone or any of those cardiac changes using exercise, you're probably going to be better off than your non-exercising counterparts. There's evidence in the research that HRT, again, I'm not a doctor, I can't give you medical advice, but HRT does help improve some of these outcomes and does help improve some of that stuff. But that's like chronic HRT, hormone replacement therapy that's administered over a long period of time under a doctor's supervision. Don't just go shooting yourself up with estrogen, but I appreciate that you guys laugh. Thank you.
We've heard weird things before.
Love it.
CJ lives in Florida, so we get all
black
sorts of weird.
I don't know what that means. Black
not market the estrogen. Florida man.
Yeah.
Florida so, man.
So
okay.
Along weird questions, I have something about estrogen. Is there any? Have you ever seen somebody timing their maxes attempts with their changes in estrogen levels?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is this like a normal thing? Would you recommend doing this?
No,
this...
I don't.
Okay,
recommend.
Good. Okay.
So they do it with like birth control, right? Won't some people alter birth control to like make sure that they are like not?
Yes, they do.
Oh boy!
Right, and that's terrible. It's like, hey, let's just fuck up this purely natural cycle and like swing it another way.
And risk having.
Well, okay. What's the point of birth control? Why do women take birth control? The main reason.
Are you asking like two guys?
No, so I'm asking you guys why
do women
take birth control?
So, stop pregnancy.
So two reasons. To avoid pregnancy and to usually regulate or like reduce flow.
Symptoms. Yeah. If the goal is to prevent pregnancy and then we start messing with it, why are we taking it in the first place?
Right.
So I always say that having a baby will, so this was like when people were saying like, go off your birth control, like it's hurting your strength gains. It's not, to be very clear, it's not. Also a baby is going to hurt your strength gains a heck of a lot more than your birth control ever will. I don't know. I've never had a child, but I hear they're loud. I hear they don't sleep much and they require quite a bit of attention. So like, if you want to keep training probably, and you're like, sexually active, keep taking your birth control.
So going off your birth control is not like injecting yourself with test.
No, okay. No, it doesn't make
just,
you.
Just to clear the air, just to make sure that people out there know.
For any of the guys going off birth control,
right?
It's not right. Anabolic. oh my God. There's a really interesting study of two sets of women. One set was cycling normally and one set was on hormonal birth control, so the pill. And both sets of women see changes across their cycle, and which would indicate that it's not a hormone difference, because hormonal birth control blunts your cycle and you just kind of have like these little pulses across the month that actually don't result in a full like hormonal cycle. Whereas regular cycling women do see that spike in estrogen and that like bell-shaped curve of estrogen and progesterone. And so that would indicate that there's something else going on within a woman's body during that time period that is not controlled by estrogen, or it's just random fluctuations in weight. So like most of the studies see like a 5% difference in training outcomes. And like from the first half of their cycle to the second half of their cycle. And so that's can be anywhere. Like it depends on the person, but in the studies, this was like 5 pounds, maybe 10.
Sounds so like a PR to me.
Maybe, or it's just like normal training noise. Like
right.
Typically 5 to 10 pounds is like not that big a deal within a training block. And you're still getting the stimulus of training that like you would normally see. And like yesterday I was looking for some more information. And so I pulled my Instagram, which is definitely an unbiased sample, but I got stories from women who were like, I won worlds. I won national bench worlds while I was on my period. And 2 weeks prior, I won nationals, like around the time of ovulation. I have to check that. But like, it's not like, if you're not normally cycling, we can't move competitions for women's periods. It's right. Not possible. So like, be comfortable training at any point during your cycle so that, gosh forbid, you're headed towards nationals or you're headed towards worlds. You need to be able to train and win regardless. So.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that kind of would stick out for me would be, I guess, symptoms of menses affecting, I guess, the if you were using an RPE or some sort of subjective scale, that it would affect training that way.
Yeah. Sorry. That's a really good point that I forgot to mention. So if like there are definitely going to be women who have severe enough symptoms or severe enough differences in training, and we see this in the literature too, that changing their training will be efficacious. And so I like to support the idea of using RPE because it will allow for those natural changes both in your cycle and in regular life. Like sleep can be disturbed during that period of time, and so maybe if sleep is disturbed, that's what's affecting training more, maybe more than it is estrogen. But what is really important is that you have that availability and you have a plan in place to say like, I know how to target this, or I know how to take this on when it happens, instead of being like, it's my period, so I've got to, or it's the week before my period, so I've got to stop training and I'll be stronger next week. Maybe instead, and we see that women respond differently to different phases of their training. Some women do really well on their period. Some women do really poorly on their period. Most women do really, or feel like they don't do as well the week before. And so like any of those changes, I think it's reasonable to have a plan in place, be ready to go for when things change, but not see it as like the end of the world. So.
Sure.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely.
Really? Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of similar to any like subjective fluctuations or performance fluctuations in a training block. You're just sometimes it's not there, and that's how it be. And you just gotta kind of look it in the face, and be like, all right, well, maybe next week will be better.
Yeah.
But I'm not gonna get hung up on a single week or a single training session out of, you know, a whole block or a cycle or anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I like to tell women that they're more complicated than their menstrual cycle. Like you have a job, most likely you have a career, you have kids, you have relationships with other people, whether it be a significant other or friends, and all of those things, you have traffic driving to the gym. All of these things impact how your training set's going to go. And hopefully you're set up to deal with all of that. And you have systems in place to manage all of that stress or like make things work for you, but being so rigid that any little thing will throw you off, like your period or eating differently one day or not sleeping well, isn't going to be the path to success. So you have to be adaptable.
Absolutely. CJ, anything?
So just to kind of summarize, like a lot of the things we spoke on, or at least the two things, right? So menses and like male to female training. So we want to look at it as like very, like there's no difference, right? We shouldn't look at it as like all training needs to alter because you're female or because, you know, you're you know, you're about to start or anything like that. And so I think that's really important, right? Because we create a maybe like a preconceived notion of like, you know, because you're a female, you have to train completely different than a male. And, you know, I've seen it in my training. To be honest, I think females train way better than men. They just like, they recover better. They manage volume way better. Like super anecdotally, like, and like, they just, they manage percentages better. They stay injury free for longer, you know, from like coaching.
That's just because we're not as dumb as dudes.
Yeah. Or, you know, they're just not a bunch of fucking pansies. No, I mean, like, it's true. And, you know, and that's like just from my own experience. And so I've, unless an athlete has like reached out specifically, I'm like, hey, I'm really struggling this month. And it's like, all right, we'll just drop it down. You know, it's like, hey, just keep it, you know, just take everything as Z1, you know, for the next day until you feel better. And I mean, that's like, instead of like trying to like one that creates, that's really difficult, right? To program around that every month. Like that would be a lot of blunted training, right? I mean, that's like a lot, it's like 70, you know, 25% of your, whatever your cycle would be altered. That's crazy. Like that'd be tough to run a cycle like that and actually make a lot of improvements, you know?
Yeah. And to add to that, like most women don't cycle on a 28-day cycle. It's not that clean. Right. I had women who are like, I really want to try it. I'm like, okay, fine. I will help you train for this. And they're like 3 months in, they're like, I'm tired of trying to tell you when my period's going to start. Like, right. Yep. I'm tired of it too. I'm glad we came to that conclusion together. I've been tired since we started, but it's fine. We're going to do it because I'm willing to try these things. And it's not going to hurt you. And also if you're training like that, you're training 3 weeks on, 1 week off, which is how some people train. Like that's my training cycle, is I do 3 weeks on, 1 week off, because that's what I handle best. But like the goal would be to have like a higher training to days off ratio. Like if you can train for 6 weeks to 1 week off, that would be better, because then you have 6 weeks of hard training and only 1 week down, which means that that ratio is better, which means that you're getting more training time in.
Right.
My coach would love it if I didn't have to deload every 4 weeks.
I know that CJ said it was anecdotally as far as recovery goes, but do you see that reflected in the evidence as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some evidence that, shows that women are less fatigable than men, so they'll recover set to set better. There's some evidence that women can rep their, or a higher percentage of their one rep max than men can. That's true for me. That's true for a lot of women. I can rep 170 kilos for a set of four, and then I'm like, cool, and 177 is the max. That's it. Right. That's all I have.
Wow. So. I think my personal theory on that is it's got to be like, I feel it's like a muscle fiber thing of like explosion, like power development, speed, that kind of stuff, of like men usually hit one RMs just generally better, right, of like peaking forces and that kind of stuff. And so women, when hitting, and I see that in 100% across the board, like women are just, you know, staying at that 90%, 95% for really good volume. And then it's just like, right. And then just like one off and then it's gone. And I think that's why they relate to volume much better. They just like manage that kind of work, and they're, you know, you're given the same percentages or to the multiple athletes, you know, they're going to just generally recover better.
Yeah. I think it has something to do with actually more of blood delivery and oxygen delivery to the muscles, of how women and men are fatigable just based on size. So I'd have to look back in the literature. I don't remember off the top of my head, but I think it's more related to oxygen delivery and like capillary density.
Well, send that my way if you find it.
Yeah, for sure.
I will. I'll look for it. I can't remember where it is, but
we forgive you. It's fine. I'm
okay. No, that's okay. I'll be honest when I don't remember where something is.
Which we would prefer that.
I forget things. Honestly. I'm human.
We prefer saying, I don't know, instead of making up stupid shit in place.
I've made up everything so far. Don't worry.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
I think we have one last topic that we could definitely hit on in a few separate places, is just kind of pregnancy and exercise.
Mm-hmm.
I know in the past that CJ and I have kind of reflected back on, you know, the American College of Gynecology, as far as just, kind of a place to anchor people, is that this is where you should go to read about it and not listen to the stuff that we say.
Yeah. It's really hard. So see, I think barbell medicine defaults to the Canadian guidelines because they're just a little bit more pro exercise, which is obviously something we agree with and promote. And so both guidelines are fine. There's a lot of unsighted information within pregnancy, and people cite it because they have to cover their own butts, right? So because like pregnant women are a protected population, so you have to be careful, and I totally get that. But there's like two of the big things that drive me crazy are diastasis recti, which is like the separation of your abs. You guys know, but maybe your listeners don't. The separation of your muscles during training. And there's like evidence that you should only do one kind of ab exercise. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. It's actually shown that any kind of exercise, no matter what it is, helps to improve diastasis recti. And there's nothing you can do to like prevent it. So like people are like, oh, prevent DR. And I'm like, no, you can't do that. Like
that's when the waist trainers come in.
Yeah. So like, there's just a ton of different information out there that's not cited. It's not well done. Lots of people suggest not to Valsalva while you're pregnant. You have to Valsalva to, I was talking to Jordan about this yesterday. We were like, you have to Valsalva to poop, to urinate, to stand up from a seated position. So if you can do all of those things not do all of those things for 9 months, great. Right. You no longer need to Valsalva, but you're turning this thing that is like very normal. Oh, you also can't orgasm. There's one other thing. I can't remember.
Cough, maybe.
Sneeze, cough. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. So basically don't have bodily functions for the next 9 months and you'll be fine. And don't go anywhere. And so it's just this like taking a very normal thing that is part of daily life and demonizing it and fear mongering it into this big, big problem that makes women afraid to do anything and then continues to chronically underload them. Like we already chronically underload women as a society. Why are we doing so again in pregnancy? Those are just things that like drive me crazy. So yeah. You can exercise as long as you don't have absolute contraindications, which are listed both on the ACOG website and the Canadian guideline website.
And the Valsalva for the people bracing, like holding a breath or bracing or creating an increased pressure in your belly or your abdomen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah, no problem.
So like, and women who work out before, during and after pregnancy often do better during labor than do.
Yeah,
during labor and like after pregnancy.
Really interesting. So. In the Canadian guidelines, I think, where they say that people who don't exercise have more premature birth or have a lighter birth weight, or it seemed like it was a good idea to exercise while pregnant.
And I've had pregnant athletes who continue powerlifting, like deadlifting heavy, all the way up until they go to the hospital, and we typically drop the RPE to like 7 just because like the rest of your life is tiring. So walking is hard now because you're carrying so much extra weight. So we'll like drop RPE and you're still training at an RPE 7. So you're fine. It's going to be great. You're going to do fantastic. And then there's one more thing. I don't remember.
Now, do you recommend a 10 millimeter or 14 millimeter belt while pregnant or...
Oh, I don't.
It was a joke.
Oh, okay. I thought you were serious. I don't recommend a certain belt.
It was, I was just kidding.
Definitely got me. Sorry.
Go ahead, CJ.
I'm sorry. Joe's pretty dry.
No, that's okay.
There's no affliction in his voice. I just want to come back to DR because I see this so much. And do you have any recommendations post-pregnancy? You know, do you have any direction that you go, or are you just, you know, like anything you avoid or anything you focus on, any advice you give in general? It's probably going to get better on its own with general exercise.
Yeah. Typically I say it's going to get better on its own with general exercise. But whenever I work with clients, I'm like, we can talk about it more. Like, I am willing to put in more time to discuss this, like,
sure,
thing that seems really scary. Like, when right, somebody tells you your body is coming apart, you're like, that sounds terrifying. Are my organs going to fall out? And like, no, probably yeah, not. Like, when we don't have
that with like coning. It's not a very like,
yeah, it just sounds scary. So let's talk about it more. Let's discuss it more. Let's not move past a point where you're comfortable until you're comfortable. Like, we'll progress more slowly. As if it takes you a little bit longer to get back because you're worried about this, I'm totally okay with that. But I'm not going to let you like not work out, or, and like, we have to work up to exercises that you're strong enough to do. Like, you're not going to come out of pregnancy and be like, planks, let's go. Maybe you are. Maybe you were really good at planks before pregnancy, but not necessarily. And we just have to find that entry point and start there. And then we'll slowly build up to whatever your goals are. So no like blanket guidelines or yeah, suggestions, but more contact for sure.
For sure.
Yeah. I know that there was this really,
go ahead.
There was this really interesting study in the IOC, like put out five sets of guidelines. So the International Olympic Committee, the IOC, put out five sets of guidelines. And in one of them, they were talking about labor and delivery, and they had women doing like 70 or 80% of their VO2 max while in labor. In labor.
Sweet.
Do it for science.
Like, what are you? And the babies were born just fine. So go ahead, exercise while you're in labor.
Yeah.
I just think that just blows my mind. Like, I can't imagine doing 70 to 80% of my max ever. VO2 max. I don't move.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was like, VO2 max, that's pretty tough. Well, it might not be, because I assume it's probably relatively low. So that might be like walking up maybe the stairs.
I don't know. I'm just trying to imagine a very pregnant woman in labor sitting on an exercise bike with a mask on her face in order to do a VO2 max test.
Yeah.
It's funny.
Lots of fun. As if it wasn't, you know, already a weird context enough, you know?
Yeah. As if either of those options are not uncomfortable already. Put them together.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It is kind of a bittersweet that we can't do more rigorous testing with the pregnant population, right? Because it would mm-hmm. probably help with more accurate recommendations and getting people exercising at a higher intensity. But I think the IRB also is probably not going to be like, yeah, let's take one group and do like 100% maxes and see what happens to the babies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
I think it's fair, but I also think the fact that we don't have like CrossFitters who are pregnant, just like falling over dead or yeah, like having major pregnancy issues would indicate that like you're still doing CrossFit while you're pregnant. We probably are able to start asking some more complicated questions
for sure
and start looking at this stuff. And then you have to convince the moms, but which is more difficult, but just try it on the third baby. Usually by the third baby, parents are like, yeah, whatever, do yeah, that's great. My brother was like, yeah, you can play in the mud, it's fine.
Yeah,
you'll probably poke an eye out.
It's worst that can happen. CJ, you were saying about Olympic lifting, how you, I know that there's usually recommendations for not doing, using some common sense. I say that very kind of ironically, yeah, when trying to, you know, think our way through complex systems, but you like, don't do burpees, you know, don't do things that are going to possibly put you in a position that would slam your stomach anywhere. But also kind of talking about Olympic lifting. And I know the CJ and I were talking about this before. You've seen people anecdotally that do fine. Yeah, as long as they're changing their bar path a little bit, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you got to change bar, like, you know, after 6 months, bar path really needs, especially for like a snatch. And depending on like how low you're sitting, like it just might not be a thing at all. Like just depending on where you strike the bar, like, you know, like, so, I mean, again, that's like, we would seem it's common sense. Like, don't like, you know, don't smash yourself into a burpee. You can do a no push-up burpee or, you know, and, you know, just like Claire said, you know, it's, if you change some small things for relative to whatever that specific situation is for the time. And, but yeah, I mean, I've seen people like day before, like cycling hang power cleans, like nothing. I'm just like, oh my God. Like just wild. You walk in and they're wearing Fleo shorts and a sports bra. And I'm like, you should be a fucking spokesperson for how to exercise when you're pregnant. Not wearing anything, I fucking love it. Like, it's just the best. Yeah. I'm just like, go you and everything that you have. And then, you know, some people are just like, you know, they're scared to walk to the bathroom, and it's just sad.
Yeah.
And I think it's so dependent on the narratives that women are given. And some women are like, I'm not going to care. And then some women are like, I need to pay attention to everything. And I was talking with a client this morning, and she was like, I don't know what to do. Everyone's telling me to do something different. I'm like, we're going to do what you're comfortable with, not what anybody else is comfortable with.
Yeah.
No one else's problem.
It doesn't help when like stuff like talks about oxytocin and relax and come into play, and people are nervous about their pelvises falling apart and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's not just going to fall out of your body. I promise. Yes.
Yeah. Very, it can get very much so annoying and frustrating at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And also, I definitely like want to honor those fears that women have of like, you have been fed this narrative and it is really scary. And I understand you're also going into a period of life that you don't understand because you've never been there, which is really scary. And I want to honor that and like not belittle these fears. Like, they're valid fears because of where you're coming from. So
perfect.
It's just a hard game to walk.
Yes.
Hard line to walk.
Yeah. Line of toe.
Game that to works. Play. Walk.
Hard walk.
We can game. Walk the game. Yeah. I'll walk the game. It's fine.
For sure.
I think slack that line.
I'll just make up words. It's fine.
That's cool. I think one of the most common things, just like being a PT and treating regularly, is as regularly as I've ever treated, which is very minimal. Is, you know, my back started hurting 4 years ago and it hasn't gone away. And, you know, the narrative that when we came out of school was like, oh, we have all these things and we create instability and like laxity within the joint, et cetera. And then we learn it's like, you know, or you just were in a different position for 9 months with a lot of weird loading patterns. And it just like, you know, your body was just uncomfortable, you know, and then it's like, as we work towards it, it just kind of gets better, you know, but a lot of people just don't, right? Because they're scared. And it is frustrating, which is just like, pull all misinformation out.
Yeah. Cool. I don't have any, well, I mean, I have more questions that don't have to do with like what we're talking about, but we can, any further questions, CJ, that.
So I just kind of want to, I think a lot of what we talk about is very gray, which is fortunate to us, but not 100% always fortunate to the people listening. So I just kind of want to be, just get a little bit of recommendation to the best that you can, you know, like should a woman, if they desire, like take HRT, right? Is that something that you would, I know, you know, it's not your case, but you know, is that something that you would support? And I know you kind of touched on it a little bit, you know, just kind of wanted to go there to the best that you can. We want to give just a little bit of direction. Yeah.
Whoa. Going in and out of
intense. You're still muted.
All right, let's try that again. Cool. So I'm not super comfortable giving the recommendation either way.
Sure.
I'll tell you that the research says that with HRT, there is some restoration of prior strength levels. That is shown in the research, but that doesn't mean that like it's best for everybody. Right. That really is a conversation you need to have with your doctor.
CJ, we'll get an endocrinologist on here next.
Yeah. Hopefully have a conversation with a doctor who's also like experienced in exercise.
Yeah.
Like the conversations I have with doctors who are not experienced in exercise and those who are very different.
Same in the future world. Like,
yeah. It's like a completely different world. And I'm like, I don't. So find a doctor who kind of aligns with what you do and then talk to them.
Dr. Baraki might be a good person to talk to, right?
Dr. Baraki might be a great person to talk to, or his wife.
I was referring to
Lorraine. Oh, you were actually referring to Lorraine. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, and also I would be cool too, but.
I mean, all of them, like any of the people from BBM would be great.
Yeah.
So they know a lot more than I do about HRT, mostly because I'm not in medical school yet. So
Not yet.
Yeah.
I'm Go Buffaloes. Go Buffaloes.
Well, cool. Any like women's resources for fitness other than your Instagram page that people can go to try and find clarity in a positive way? Ugh. Or not. or just keep.
I just think there's so much. I struggle to make this recommendation.
Sure.
Leah's great. Go look at Leah's page. I struggle to make this recommendation because there is so much misinformation out there. And like, I struggle. I routinely will call up a mentor and be like, hi, this doesn't make sense. Can you explain this to me? And it's someone with many more degrees than I have who has to explain these things to me or help me like kind of dig through what's bullshit and what's not. Sorry. What's bull CJ hockey and what's like three not.
Times already. It's fine.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even notice.
always curse. We don't have the stamp. We're not, okay. not child approved. It's fine.
We have to now.
I struggle to make that recommendation, but like if someone is blanketly telling you to not do something, I'd question it. And if somebody is telling you, you have to have this in order to be successful, I'd question it. There are no absolutes in this game.
Certainty like, is a tough one.
Yeah. If someone's like certainty, if someone is certain about it, I'd question it. And so I'd rather have someone who's like a little bit wavering or like a little bit unsure and is willing to like direct you towards either research or other people instead of saying like, yep, this is perfect. I already know everything. So.
Which is kind of what happens when we read books in the mainstream media, like the one that I had asked you about. You're like,
yeah.
I don't like books. They're kind of lame, which I agree with. You know, it's
the problem with these books is that anyone can publish them. There's like no review process. Like at least with research, it's not perfect, but there is a review process that like at some level says like, this isn't totally full of shit. But like I've read books on women's health and I'm like, this is absolutely by doctors. And I'm like, this is absolutely full of shit. There's nothing useful in here. And it's just fear mongering. So,
but
it's pretty and it's pink.
5-star reviews on Amazon. So
it must be true. Well, also think about who's reviewing that. It's either people who really loved it or really hated it.
Right. We're paid to review it.
Or we're paid to review it.
Damn it, Jeff Bezos. Okay, cool. Well,
that took like a weird turn at the end, but like
that's okay.
This was fun. Thanks for having me.
Yes, I have. We usually have like a final question.
Oh, okay. I'm ready. I'm not leaving.
We're gonna let you plug all your stuff as well.
Okay.
Do you have a good final question, or do you want me to?
No, I wasn't thinking about it. I forgot.
Okay,
I forgot. You're up. Your final questions are way better than
Claire,
mine.
Any camping tips for beginners that you would give? Because I know that at least in your bio on barbellmedicine.com is like you find somewhere to hike and read. Oh. Is there any, I know that, you know, Cody wants to get a Tacoma one day. Is there any like camping or hiking outdoor tips for the person getting started?
If you're camping, not backpacking. If you're camping, right. Get a camp shower. Changes the game. Totally recommend a camp shower.
Is that and one that you like hammer to a tree and
Put the water
in there. Heat. Okay, I got you.
Yeah. Camp showers, ideal. Mostly just for washing your face because you always have like water ready to go to wash your face. Baby wipes in your tent to clean your feet every night. And then the feet. If you clean your feet and then you lie down and you put your feet in your sleeping bag, it feels so much better. Yeah, I take a whole shower with a baby wipe too, but my feet especially, definitely.
Got it, feet.
It's not weird. Don't make it weird.
No, I'm not.
And then if you're backpacking, when I backpack, I just carry my camera in my hand. Don't ever put it away. You'll regret it.
Got it. And,
that's definitely not a beginner's tip.
That's okay. They're tips. Then people can take them. You've been getting into photography. You're on a 365 day, one picture a day.
I had to stop.
Oh, Claire.
I know. I was really like, I was on a roll. I got to day 29. I was like, I almost made it to a month. And then, so I currently have a full-time job. I'm working for Barbell Medicine almost full-time and I'm studying for the MCAT and trying to be a competitive powerlifter. And I was like, I can't do it all.
Sure.
So photography had to take a backseat. I will do my 365 days and I'll pick up like at day 30. It's just not going to be a consecutive 365 days.
Right.
I got to finish the MCAT and then I can be consecutive after that.
Where can people find the photo account?
It's called Bullseye Photo. Zai as in my last name, so Bullzai.
Now is Bullseye Strength still in function?
Bullseye Strength as an Instagram page still exists with no posts and nothing on it, no followers. Okay. I'm saving it. I don't know why I'm saving it. I'm not really willing to give it up yet. My website still exists. All of that still exists. It's just now a landing page that redirects to Barbell Medicine.
Got it.
I'm just too attached to the name Bullseye.
It's a great name.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't get rid of it.
It's funny because in our second podcast, when we talked to John Flagg, I actually referenced Bullseye Strength. And then I subsequently found out that when we released that podcast, it was no longer a thing anymore.
It didn't exist anymore.
Great. So I'm sending people to nowhere. No man's land.
I should maybe remake the page and then make it just a landing page to go to Barbell Medicine.
There you go.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
That would just serve a purpose.
So where, plug all your stuff. Where can the people get in contact? You find your information, all that.
The best way to get in contact with me is actually to contact one of the other BBM team members. I don't answer anything anymore. I'm kidding. So it's easiest to get a hold of me on Instagram. You can talk to me. I talk back to people who DM me, as long as you're not weird or creepy. And then I'm on Twitter very occasionally. Mostly I use Twitter.
Twitter's still a thing?
Twitter is still a thing, especially in academia.
Now you just use Twitter to take a picture for Instagram. Screenshot of your tweet.
Right. White picture.
White backgrounds, they slap. So what are your handles? I'll put them in the
It's at @Claire_barbellmedicine for Instagram. And then my Twitter is Claire Zai, all one word, I think. Okay. I don't remember. I can look it up. I am sitting in front of a laptop.
And I hope that at some point soon you'll accept my Facebook friend request.
Oh yeah, I suck at Facebook. Facebook. Not a lot, just a little bit.
You're so awkward. I love it.
What is my Twitter handle? It's Claire's Eye. All of it.
Okay, cool. And I'll put all this stuff in the bottom there too.
Yeah. Don't try and contact me on Facebook. I won't respond.
Got it.
Facebook is for my mom. Yeah. The only reason I still have it.
Shout out to Mama's Eye. Cool. Thanks for coming on and giving us a great deal of good information. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. I think it would be
very much helpful to a lot of people.
Yeah. I really hope people enjoy do what works for you. So
another podcast that we end up with it should just be we should make another logo. It's this is what it is.
Nah. Something nuance, is that the word?
I've heard it thrown around a few
times. I don't know if that's just is that it? I don't know.
We'll figure it out. Cool. Thanks for coming out, guys.
Thanks for having me. I'll say goodbye now instead of 10 minutes early. All right,
see you.